Hello, and welcome back to the podcast. It's your host, Stony Baloney. And on this episode, we get Gavin back on, and we talked about some crazy shit. Talked about DNA cells and fucking psilocybin mushrooms, fucking mutations, and fucking all kinds of crazy bullshit. Anyways, yeah. It was just a quick little smoke sesh. And he probably won't be back until spring. So, looking forward to that. Enjoy.
I'm glad I didn't smoke last night because I had a hard time sleeping as it was.
Oh, I imagine so.
I don't know why. I mean, the bed's super comfortable, but Kitty said her and Fiona didn't sleep at all, so maybe I was having some sixth sense daddy, daddy senses.
Yeah.
I love that the old vice is still in here. That came, this whole thing came from my parents' old house.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm actually, like, I don't know, I want a gym in here, too. So, that's taking up a lot of space. I'm thinking about moving it somewhere out of here. I don't know, though.
Well, if you ever decide to get rid of it, talk to me first.
Oh, for sure.
I may want it, but I might not. But
I mean, I like the table because you could do anything on it.
Uh-huh.
You know, and not care about fucking it up.
Yeah. I imagine you could probably get a couple $100, at least $100 for it if you ever wanted to sell it.
Yeah.
Keep it.
Cause I want to keep it.
Yeah.
It's just, I want a gym in here, too. I don't know.
Yeah.
I want gym equipment in here.
I get it.
You know? Fuck. But I like it because, I don't know. Anyways.
So, episode
51.
Episode 51.
Yeah.
Season 3.
Season fucking, I don't know.
Whatever.
You know what? As I went along with this Anchor podcast,
uh-huh.
You know, the app, they keep updating it, right? So you do more and more. Well, one of the things that they were able to do after I had already started was, oh, now you can put episode number and episode or season number,
mm-hmm.
in before you publish it. But I've been putting episode, you know, number 50 like in the title.
Yeah, who cares?
So I'm like,
what
fuck it. But I'm like,
is.
Fuck it, dude. Yeah. I'm like, fuck it. You know, it's just whatever it is now. It is what it is. It is what it is.
That is a fact. That is not a fact that you can pick. That is just an objective motherfucking fact. In this day and age, you don't get many of those.
You might need some more.
Oh, yeah.
I burnt the rest of that.
Little half full there. Yeah, in this day and age, with all these different facts you can choose from, mm-hmm. to get something that you can't really argue with is it's hard to come by. Fact that you can't manipulate or take or leave.
Right. Yeah, some things you just can't manipulate. I still want to do my mushroom psilocybin.
I saw your book on psilocybin.
Oh,
restroom.
Did you?
A buddy of mine just got me a book called Mushrooms, Molds, and Miracles. I haven't read it yet, but I guess it's all about how fungus has influenced history and all these things.
You know
that
book by
do.
Michael Pollan?
Yeah.
So,
Change Your Mind?
Yeah. I guess, you remember you finished it, right?
Yeah.
Remember how he was describing that not the location, but the area,
mm-hmm.
and he
went with Paul Stanley?
Right. And he... Well, I listened to a more recent episode of Paul Stamets with Joe Rogan, and he got pissed at Michael Pollan
for
doing that.
Giving
because
that
he literally gave it away, he said.
Yeah, there's not that many state parks right there.
Yeah. He was like, what the fuck? And then so they became overcrowded,
uh-huh.
he said, and then people were getting arrested because they're getting caught.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know, the park authorities were like, oh, what the fuck?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. No, I don't blame Paul. I'd be pissed too.
Yeah, and
I'd be really pissed.
And I'm not surprised because you and I even talked about going down there and. Uh-huh. You're like,
yeah, it can't be that hard to find. To find the mushrooms themselves might still be really hard. But right. To find the park where they're at.
Right. You know, he said there's two. What did he say? There's like two locations, and he pointed out three. So he pretty much gave two away or something like that. I don't remember
the details. I remember it was a state park along the Columbia River.
Yeah.
And it's like. There's probably only one state park right there.
Well, I guess there's three. There's three. And he's like, it's at one of those. Wink, wink.
Yeah.
Yeah, like.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah, it's not going
to Well, and hard. When the park rangers know that, yeah. Like, they're aware of it. Cause they
it's Now
like
it's on their radar.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Whatever. But, I mean.
But mushrooms, though. Fucking cool shit.
Yeah, I mean, I've taken that book that you were just talking about. I've walked around with it in the yard and around the property,
looking for them,
and like. But dude, I don't know. Like, I'm looking.
So
at them,
you're
like,
not gonna
fuck.
Find anything of interest in your yard. In fact, I would probably avoid anything you find growing in the yard.
I see some weird shit growing here.
Oh yeah, you're gonna find a lot of parasols.
Parasols?
Maybe a fairy ring. Mm. Parasols are a family of mushrooms. They're like a white mushroom that looks like an umbrella and it's got a ring around the stem. They're not too, I mean, they could look like an Amanita at first glance, but they'll open up more than an Amanita and they'll turn into like this nice kind of flat topped umbrella like thing. But there's just a ton of LBMs, little brown mushrooms,
yes.
What you find growing in your yards and stuff, which, I mean, our favorite species of psychedelics are types of little brown mushrooms, but they're not going to grow in your yard. They're, you know, you're going to find liberty caps up in, like, horse pastures and stuff, or cow pastures, that kind of place.
What about logging?
Probably not. There is blue rings that grow here in the mountains or in the woods.
Mm-hmm.
I believe it's like, you know, kind of an old growth or dense, forest kind of conditions. I've found a blue ring once in my life around here. It was when I was in high school and I didn't know anything about mushroom identification, but I was like, I saw this mushroom and I was like, I've heard of blue rings before, and it's definitely a blue ring, and so I picked it and brought it home, and I never ended up identifying it, because I wasn't into mushrooms at the time, but that's the only blue ring I've ever seen.
Did it, when you touched it, did it bruise blue, or did it, like...
See, at the time, I didn't know to look for that kind of stuff. I just knew, I saw the mushroom, it had the iridescent blue ring around its cap, and I was like, that is unique. I've never seen a mushroom like this before, and I know I've heard the name blue rings as, you know, in reference to psychedelics.
Right,
yeah.
And did it have, like, dark pores? Like, black almost?
Like I said, this was before I knew anything about mushrooms, so I didn't know to look for any of those things.
Right, you're right.
Yeah, I wish at that moment, I wish I had taken it to some people or gotten a book and done my homework then, but it was, you know, 3 years later when I tried psychedelics for the first time and was like, oh, mushrooms are fucking amazing. I didn't even like, you know, store-bought mushrooms, you know, eating mushrooms when I was a kid and teenager, so.
I'm pretty sure they made it legal in Oregon, or?
Oh, cool.
Psilocybin.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is crazy.
Well, I mean, we're on the verge of a revolution, I think, in psychedelics, depending on how things go politically, but even on the state level, they're just learning so much about its medical applications. I mean, I had...
You know what's helped contribute to all this? Is the internet.
Oh, yeah.
The whole everyone being
able... Because that's how the information gets disseminated to the people.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's just,
because before the
people
internet...
People are more aware. It's like, oh, because, you know...
Mm-hmm. But the internet also spreads a lot of disinformation, too.
It's highlighted another thing, too, though. And it's highlighted that a lot of people aren't right in the head.
We know more.
It's more apparent. it's more in our face because it's literally on our phones.
Mm-hmm.
Back then, it wasn't. It happened. Mm-hmm. We just didn't see it. But yeah. Now it's people are able to make videos of it
mm-hmm.
and upload it.
Mm-hmm. And people are talking about mental health, and people are talking about these things that we can do.
Yeah, we didn't realize how bad the mental health thing was until
mm-hmm.
social media.
Back, well, even just 15 years ago, it was or 20 years ago, it was like, oh yeah, this person's crazy, let's throw them in the loony bin, you mm-hmm. know, and it's like, okay, but what about all the people that didn't get identified?
And I think that's why we become more open-minded to these other quote-unquote medicines like psilocybin with the mind. And,
mm-hmm. and LSD
mm-hmm.
and even marijuana. MDMA.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So.
I know. I think...
I mean, if you were just open-minded to the impossible and doing the impossible and like even like... what are those cells that help you pretty much regenerate?
The fucking stem cells.
Stem cells. It's illegal here. You have to go out of the country.
It's not entirely illegal. There is actually a lot of stem cell use and research that goes on here. You just can't be like... There's certain applications of it that are not legal in the U.S. Mm-hmm. So there are things, and... You know, 10 years ago, a lot of people did leave the country for stem cell medicine and mostly stem cell research. Researchers would go abroad to Europe
yeah.
and other places to do their research because they couldn't get funding in the U.S. or it wasn't legal where they were at. But nowadays, there's a lot of applications of stem cells and ways to harvest stem cells that don't involve dead babies. Because that's why it was so controversial at first, was because all we knew was that we could get them from fetuses.
Mm.
That's definitely there's a lot there. But now, because we've been allowed to do some research mm-hmm. on it, we now know that there's an infinite source of stem cells in each and every one of us. We have stem cells
in
our own body.
Source.
We just need to know where they're at. And there's other sources, like, you know, there's more moral sources of stem cells, like placenta has stem cells in it. So people who don't save their placentas after childbirth, the hospital takes them, and those get used for stem cell medicine. So Dad had, I don't know what the source was, but Dad got stem cell grafts on his bed sore, on his foot. So, like, it's common enough now that they're not just using these for life-saving fucking surgeries
mm-hmm.
where they're, you know, replacing parts of people's spines or hearts or whatever. It's available enough that they can use it to, you know, help heal my dad's bed sore on his foot that was infected.
You know, my mind just went somewhere.
Let's go.
When you said we have an infinite source of stem cells,
mm-hmm.
and we just don't know the location of it yet.
Well, we're learning the locations.
But we're trying to discover where it's at,
mm-hmm.
right? So my mind is like, you know how we mine for ore?
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty much what we're doing. We're mining the body
for resources mm-hmm.
at a molecular level.
Sure, yeah. That's a good way to put it. I think that trying to use our own stem cells on our bodies, I think that that's, and this is just my personal bias, not based on any research or anything, but I think that that's, you know, a preferable way to do it because it's from our own body, one. It's
right.
Our DNA and all this sort of stuff. And, you know, that's, I feel like that's its purpose in our bodies is to heal and create tissue that are, you know, essential to our survival. And so you're just changing where it's at that it's doing it when you're using your own stem cells. I don't see any moral dilemma to using donated stem cells from fetuses or umbilical cords or placentas or anywhere else. But those ones are from someone else's body. And so it is, it's more agreeable than an organ transplant because those can, you know, even in this day and
yeah.
age, those can still not take. I don't think there's any issues that I'm aware of with stem cells taking. But, you know, they just weren't made for that body. Mm. Like, sure, they're a blank slate, they're a tabula rasa, and they can become whatever type of cell that they're...
But if it's coming from the main resource...
Well, every cell's DNA is different, and I don't know how...
How would you even extract stem cells? How do you even extract stem cells, first off?
This is beyond my expertise. That's a great question. Gavin, if you're listening to this someday in the future, note to self, find that out. I don't have a smartphone, so I probably, if I listen to this, it's going to be in years. my guess would be they use tissue where it has the highest concentrations, like an umbilical cord or a fetus or a placenta, where there's going to be high concentrations. They probably just take that. My guess is, take that tissue and just insert it directly into the area that needs the healing. Because what stem cells do, maybe they might mix it with a sample of the tissue that it's going to. Maybe they'll mix it with some of that before they put it into the site. But they mimic the cells around them. They're a blank slate. They can turn into anything. Imagine like an insect larva that hasn't been assigned an insect, you know, what it's going to become. And so it's these identical larvas, and you put them into a beehive, and they turn into a bee.
It just mutates into into its mm-hmm. surrounding.
Yeah, and I don't know how that works, and maybe researchers do have an idea, but I don't know if they have, so every cell in your body.
Because it's like life. It's like, stem cells are like life.
Absolutely. Well, yeah.
They grow into something.
They
have the ability to grow into something.
They're already alive, but they can change what they grow into.
You're right. They have the ability that they don't choose to be one thing or another. It's just wherever you put it in the body, that it has the ability to then just become that part.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And that's what makes it so powerful, is it can replace
anything.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And
it's the essence of life. Wow, that's insane.
So the thing I'm really curious about now is what, because every cell, I'm learning in my biology classes, you know, I'm only a day ahead of them, or sometimes a few minutes ahead of them as we're learning. Sometimes on the same page as we're learning about this stuff, because it's very different than when I was in high school.
Oh, yeah, okay.
But learning about DNA replication and neurologic, you know, body systems and all that stuff. And so we're learning about genes and chromosomes right now, and how they reproduce in every cell.
Mm-hmm.
Every single cell in your body, all how many billion of them, have the exact same copy of your DNA, except for mutations that have occurred as cells reproduce, because they all started from, you know, one cell essentially, when your daddy's sperm infiltrated your mommy's egg and fertilized it, and you got, you know, half your DNA from your dad and half from your mom and made Steven. Every cell has been created from that cell. So every cell has an identical copy of the DNA that cell started with. And there's two things that happen, though. One is, as those cells are dividing, you know, over the 30 years that have created Steven, and those cells are constantly replicating as you're growing, and as cells are dying and being replaced, there is slight mutations that can occur, but are pretty rare.
Right.
You know, like, your cells are pretty much identical in their DNA. You know, other than these hopefully insignificant amounts of mutations that have occurred
throughout the years.
Yeah, with each multiplication, because of damage from UV, you know, it damages the DNA in your skin cells, which those damages get passed on long enough from one generation of skin cell to the next generation of skin cell.
And what you digest and inhale.
Exactly. The chemicals you're exposing yourself, they're essentially your environmental factors and your life choices.
Right.
Those can damage your DNA, and so those usually damage your DNA in localized areas wherever that factor is affecting. So your lungs or your liver or your skin, depending on what you're exposing yourself to. And so those get passed on from one generation to the next, and those build up, those mutations or those damages have built up in subsequent generations of that type of cell. And what happens is certain genes get destroyed or altered in this process. And those genes, in the case of cancer, those genes that are destroyed or damaged are the ones that are responsible for the stopping of the reproduction process of a cell. So most cells, they 10% of their life is their reproduction. The other 90% is performing cell functions and copying DNA to be prepared to divide. But 90% of the time, it's just doing its job, and it's not making new cells. And it depends on what type of cell it is, like neurons, you know, in your brain and spinal cord and nerves. Those reproduce much less frequency than, say, skin cells, muscle cells, the cells that die off pretty quickly or need to be replaced regularly. That's why damage to the nervous system is
So you said throughout time, like as you go through like your environmental factors, right? Well, what if you went through some trauma, like severe trauma, that altered your DNA?
So that's a great point you bring up, and you're kind of getting into epigenetics there.
Would that affect your offspring?
Yeah. So yeah, this is called epigenetics, and it's a pretty new study. It's new information. It's kind of a recent discovery, and I still don't fully grasp epigenetics, but. Well, I guess there's still a lot to learn about it.
Right.
But what we see is that conditions in an individual's lifetime, so a person's life, can change the... So we need to explain a little more about DNA. So the DNA, every cell has a different copy, the same copy, you know, an identical copy of this DNA. But what's different between a liver cell and a muscle cell is that different genes within that DNA, so genes are like traits, different genes inside of that copy of DNA are turned on or off. And so one's for liver cells. For a liver cell, there's going to be liver cell genes and instructions for how this cell should behave and what it needs to do.
The way it operates.
Right. It's basically its piece of the blueprint in this huger blueprint that is your DNA, right? And so only one tiny section of that controls liver cells and affects liver cells is going to be turned on in a liver cell, and everything else is going to be turned off.
And so for the brain, if it experiences trauma...
So what happens is, in your lifetime, depending on things that happen to you, different markers, the markers are like the things that turn genes on or off. Different markers can turn certain genes on or off. And so if you're a smoker, or you're regularly exposing, you have nicotine, say you're addicted to nicotine, your body or your genes, certain markers in your DNA can turn on. And that allows your body and your cells to better cope with the level of nicotine in your blood that is toxic. Okay, so without this gene, you're going to experience more cell death due to this toxic thing. So the genes or the cells turn those markers on, or somehow those markers are turned on so that your cells are better able to cope with this chemical. Okay, so that... trait, that marker, can be passed on to your offspring now. Now, usually, most markers don't get passed on.
Right.
Like in the sex cells, they reproduce differently. They're created differently in your nuts and in your ovaries than every other cell in your body is. So sex cells, when their DNA is created, it makes a mutation. It takes clusters of genes, big chunks of DNA, and swaps them onto a different chromosome, which is another bundle of DNA in the cell. And so it basically takes pieces of the blueprint, takes a couple puzzle pieces out of the blueprint and switches spots. Mm. And now your blueprint's slightly different, right? Mm-hmm. And so this is good because it creates genetic diversity, and so we're not, exactly like our parents. We have this possibility of that change or that mutation. That's mm-hmm. what a mutation is. That mutation to be beneficial. Mm-hmm. And so you might live longer or, reproduce better, whatever it is. Most of the time, those mutations are totally benign. Vast majority of the time, not that big of a difference. It's the reason why your eye color is not a perfect match of your parents, or why your voice is a little deeper than your dad's, or whatever, yeah. Whatever trait it is that's slightly different from both your parents.
Like, it's similar. You see the similarities, but you're different.
Yeah. It's what makes you you.
Yeah.
And for everyone. Yeah.
Because the other day, when I first was walking up to the tractor and your dad was in the truck, he rolled down his window and he looked out the window and it looked just like you for a second, dude, with his beard and his hat.
Considering my dad looks like a 78-year-old man right now, not too flattering.
I was from a distance and I wasn't wearing glasses. It was the general, the bone structure the beard.
No, I get it. We're definitely, we've got a look, certainly, in our family. But anyways, so during that phase when all that's going on and sex cells are being made, those markers are supposed to be erased. They're supposed to be wiped off. Like you take the whiteboard and you wipe it clean, and so now you still got your DNA there, but the markers that were picked up during the lifetime of that individual, the parent, those are supposed to be gone. But what we're finding is that that's not always the case. The markers that change during their lifetime, like adapting to higher levels of nicotine, can go passed on to the offspring. Okay, that's great. So some of your parents' adaptation in their lifetime gets passed on to you, so you are a little slightly better adapted to your environment. Wonderful. Well, what was your parents' environment that caused that marker? What was it that they did that turned on the gene, or that changed that gene?
Oh, sorry, my mind was also going somewhere else. Honestly, I was like listening to what you're saying, and then it was making my mind think about other things.
So the nicotine. So your parents, the thing that changed your parents was the nicotine. So that change, that marker got passed on to you. So now your body is better adapted, or going to be better adapted to exposure to nicotine. Well, that means you're born with a higher likelihood of becoming addicted to nicotine.
I definitely didn't.
Didn't follow all that. Sorry for the science lesson.
I also chose not to smoke. Deep within myself made that decision.
Yeah.
And so it became, that's it.
And I think that's very important. I think that a lot of kids from that kind of background are, they make that decision. They're like, I don't want this life. I don't want.
No, because I don't have to be like my parents. I could be me. I could be who I want to be. That's the amazing thing about being a person. You can choose who you want to be.
It's not all genetics. Genetics doesn't determine everything.
No.
Your decisions, that's.
Where you take your feet is where it takes you. You control where your feet go. I was just thinking of something earlier. Dang it. But I lost track of what I was thinking.
Alright, well, I should probably wrap this up. I gotta go get some stuff packed.
Yeah, for sure. Alright. Yeah, it was a good one.
Thanks, buddy.
Yeah.
Sorry, I rambled on and on and on.
No, you're good. We'll have to do this again soon. Sometime soon. Yeah. Next time you come up.
Alright. Yeah, it'll be probably be a couple months now. Be spring, I'm guessing.
Sure.
Spring break, maybe.
Fuck yeah. What's spring break?
I think it's like early April, first week of April.
Oh, okay, cool. Yeah. Alright, cool. Awesome. Yep. Looking forward to it.
I'll probably see you later this weekend.
Alright. See you later.
Love you, brother.
Love you too.